KALW.
I really wanted to emphasize mental health and get in more inside all the struggles that we're dealing with.
A teen in Los Gatos creates a space where her peers can safely reveal some of their deepest personal struggles.
Hearing someone's voice is a way of connecting with them that you don't always get through different mediums.
Then from the Uncuffed team at San Quentin, we'll hear how one man grew up in Cambodia and ended up incarcerated in the U.S.
Where we came from, the authorities robbed us. Like, we would not call the authorities, whatever it is.
Plus, we'll get an update on how the city of Oakland is handling the coronavirus pandemic.
There is a light at the end of that tunnel, and we are going towards it as safely and responsibly as we can.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Starting today, Alameda County is one of several Bay Area counties loosening some shelter-in-place restrictions. While East Bay health officials say residents are on the right track with social distancing and staying inside, the number of COVID-19 cases in Alameda County did jump over the weekend. And Oakland still has the highest number of cases in the county. But more testing resources are coming to the town. Here to talk about that and some other Oakland news is KALW's East Oakland reporter Janae Darden. Hey, Janae.
Hey, Hannah.
So some things are sort of coming back to normal today in Oakland and around the Bay Area, like real estate transactions and construction.
Right, which is why you may be hearing some background noise on my end.
And on my end, maybe as well.
Yes, just a warning. Childcare for kids of essential workers, outdoor businesses like landscaping are also restarting. And Alameda County Health Officer Dr. Erica Pond spoke about this during Mayor Libby Schaaf's weekly town hall on Thursday. She says they loosened some rules because the number of deaths, infections, and hospitalizations are slowly going down.
Okay, but there was a rise in reported infections in Alameda County over the weekend. How big of a jump in numbers was it?
Well, as of last night, there are now 1,749 cases, which is a 7% increase from Friday. But according to the East Bay Times, there's also been an increase in cases in other Bay Area counties. I'm not sure why. This possibly could be because more testing is becoming available in the Bay Area. But various county health officials say sheltering in place and physical distancing has slowed the increase of new cases. And Hannah, when you look at the county charts, you can see the rates of infections leveling off.
Mm-hmm. How many cases are there just in Oakland?
So as of last night, 520, and that's 56 cases more than what was announced last Thursday during the mayor's town hall meeting.
Mm-hmm. So Oakland has the most number of coronavirus cases in Alameda County, and I've heard East Oakland is being hit the hardest. Why?
Oakland is the largest city in the county, so it's not really a complete shock that we would have the most total cases. But Oakland Voices, a news website KALW has partnered with in the past, looked at the number of infections based on zip codes, and the numbers were coming in high in East Oakland. That community, as you know, has a large Black and brown population, and we know other cities with similar populations are also being affected in high numbers. Now, in East Oakland, like other communities of color, people are dealing with health disparities, more pre-existing conditions like hypertension, diabetes, asthma. You know, wealth disparities make it harder to get good health care, and many Black, Latinx, and Asians in the area are blue-collar essential workers, so they're also on the front lines with more exposure to the virus.
Yeah, it's a systemic issue. And there have been complaints about social distancing in Oakland, especially crowding at Lake Merritt. Is that a problem in East Oakland?
Yeah, and while I've seen corner stores only allowing a few customers in at a time, residents are complaining that folks are gathering in groups outside and hanging out. You know, the weather is nice, neighbors are throwing barbecues, sideshows are still happening. And that's not to say this isn't a problem in other cities, but I think because coronavirus is really hitting this area hard, some East Oakland residents have gone online to ask people to stay at home.
All right. Speaking of homes, what is happening with the unhoused community?
Well, two Oakland hotels have been filled with nearly 400 people who are unhoused and have symptoms or are vulnerable to the virus. And the county is opening up an additional 262 rooms this week, which includes another Oakland hotel. And there will be 67 new trailers by the Coliseum for this population. Now, some activists think the government needs to do more and quickly. So they're doing a GoFundMe to put unhoused people in hotels that need to shelter in place. And I've also heard community activists say that the city and county needs to do more in handing out masks to people who are unhoused or low income.
Mm-hmm. And Janae, what about testing? That's been a big issue during this pandemic.
Right. Dr. Erica Pond says new testing sites are opening in the county this week, one in West Oakland, but call 311 or visit oaklandca.gov/testing to register. In East Oakland, there's already testing at Roots Community Health Center. This is all free for people who work or live in Alameda County, and it's fine if you don't have insurance or if you're undocumented, but just call 311 or go to oaklandca.gov/testing for more info.
All right. Thanks for the update, Janae.
Thank you, Hana.
Janae Darden is KALW's East Oakland reporter. You can go to KALW.org to hear more of her stories and find out how you can watch her documentary called Where is East Oakland? You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's an issue for people of all ages, including teenagers. According to the CDC, suicide is the second leading cause of death for young people age 15 to 24, and the rate is increasing. A Los Gatos teen who experienced challenges of her own wanted to give a voice to peers in her community who are also struggling with mental health issues. So she started a podcast for them to shed light on what's happening in their lives. KALW's Sarah Lee Sterland reports.
So what does it look like for you too when like the depression kind of spirals?
It was kind of a perfect storm, honestly. Mm-hmm. That's around the time when my grandmother passed.
A student from Los Gatos High shares with her classmate Casey Kamali what led her to become suicidal.
I went through a really like horrible breakup. Mm-hmm. I started self-harming and it got to the point where like I felt like nobody was there. You know?
Then she was hospitalized for a week. This sounds like a late-night heart-to-heart chat between two teenagers, but it's actually an episode of Casey's podcast, Mind in Pieces.
So Mind in Pieces is basically the life and mind of a teenager.
Casey is 19 years old. Every weekend, she and another youth from her community share their personal struggles. Her guests are anonymous. She records the conversations in the granny unit in her parents' garden. Casey and her guests chat in a dimly lit space while seated at a dining room table with two mic stands sitting on top.
I really wanted to emphasize mental health and get a more inside and in-depth look at the teenage mind and sort of all the struggles that we're dealing with, whether it's family issues, mental health issues, body image, just kind of all the things going on in our minds.
Casey lives with her parents and siblings in a spacious home. A yellow lab and an inquisitive gray cat greet me at the door.
Hey, knock it off. You're fine. Relax.
Like a lot of families in the suburbs of Los Gatos, they look picture perfect.
Hello. Welcome. You want to look good. You want the other community members to think that you are doing great. But in reality, it's a totally unrealistic expectation.
Casey, a senior, has gone through some rough times in high school. She was diagnosed with bipolar and obsessive compulsive disorder at 13. In early 2018, during her sophomore year, she went on medical leave. She suffered a series of concussions from soccer, which led to migraines. For months, all Casey could do was lie in bed in the dark. Exposure to light was painful because of her migraines. She tried homeschooling, but could not concentrate.
I was in a dark box, basically, of my room for days at a time without really interacting with anyone other than my mom.
She says the isolation was getting to her, and by the fall, she was having suicidal thoughts.
I basically was just building to the point where I didn't feel like I could keep myself safe anymore, and I went to my parents and I told them just that.
That's when her parents rushed her to a psychiatric facility. Casey was hospitalized for several days. Too much stimulation triggered migraines as she recovered. However, she could handle sound.
Podcasts were kind of the only thing I had at that time, so I couldn't really read books, I couldn't watch TV, and so podcasts kind of became the ideal medium for me.
That's where she got the idea for Mind in Pieces.
Do you want to address the second incident?
Yeah, no, my sister passed away last summer.
Casey says the intimate form on her favorite podcasts inspired Mind in Pieces' format.
Hearing someone's voice is a way of connecting with them that you don't always get through different kind of mediums. Just felt like I was with my friends.
Casey got better through therapy. Then she launched her podcast last spring. She's recorded nearly 50 episodes, each averaging about 1,000 plays. Drew Michaud-Getz is a senior at Los Gatos High who listens regularly. He's also missed a lot of school because of migraines from sports injuries. He says the podcast provokes mixed feelings.
It was always really nice to me to be able to, listen to this podcast and know that I'm not the only one who goes through it. It is hard for me to listen to it, though, sometimes because it does bring up a lot of emotions of, feeling trapped in this.
Casey says many of her listeners are also parents and teachers in Los Gatos. The town is known for its affluence, but many students still wrestle with mental health issues. According to Santa Clara County data, teens are admitted into emergency rooms at almost double the rate of adults for suicide attempts and ideations. That's the largest of any age group in the county. But the CDC reports that suicide rates for teens in the county are actually lower than the national average. That's likely due in part to the county's suicide prevention programs. Several guests in Mind in Pieces have been suicidal for various reasons, such as sexual assault, living with an abusive parent, and academic pressure. But what they tend to have in common is that they say their parents don't pay attention to them.
When a parent comes into my office, that's one of the questions I ask them. I say, do you know your kids? Do you know how they hurt?
That's Christy Hyun, a local family therapist. She says her clients are professionally successful, but when it comes to parenting,
people are so busy just studying, achieving. You know, I don't know if people actually talk.
That's where she sees the power of Casey's podcast.
And I think that's why this Mind in Pieces maybe resonates with teenagers, because somebody's actually listening to them. They're talking about something that they're struggling with.
And the show opens a door for communications between parents and their kids.
It allows, as a parent, a peek into that place that kids don't want to show you and don't want to talk about.
That's Bea, the mother of one of Casey's podcast guests. For this story, she's going by Bea to protect her daughter's anonymity. Bea's daughter confessed something to her after Casey interviewed her.
A lot of what was on the podcast I knew. I would say 90%. What I did not know that she had been hiding is that she had been starting with the beginnings of an eating disorder.
Cooper, you have to stay.
Sorry.
We're going to be in the guest house, so if you could just keep an eye on...
Back at Casey's house, her mother, Chris Kamali, tells me Mind in Pieces is transforming her daughter, and the project has given Casey a renewed sense of identity.
It brought her to a whole new place of being okay with what she's been through, knowing that there's value in what she's been through.
Casey says she's in a much better place these days. A new drug has helped her to reduce her migraines. And she wants to keep the podcast going after high school and diversify her audience.
But I think college will kind of give me the opportunity to do that and reach more people from other backgrounds.
Casey plans on studying criminal psychology at Northeastern University this fall. In Los Gatos, I'm Sarah Lai Sterland for Cross Currents. I had a dream. I got everything I wanted. But when I wake up, I see you with me. Sarah is a fellow in KELW's Audio Academy. If you or someone you know needs help, you can text RENEW to 741741, or you can call 1-800-273-8255, and we'll have those numbers also at KELW.org. I tried to scream, but my head was underwater. They called me weak. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Next up is a story from the Uncuffed team at San Quentin Radio.
San Quentin Radio, bringing you informative educational stories from the inside out.
In order to make something grow, you got to own a little dirt.
You don't tell. You see what goes on?
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop, and all of a sudden, you heard this.
Many of the people incarcerated at San Quentin Prison have faced hardships in their life growing up in this country, poverty, racism, and violence. And some wrestle with trauma that came with them when they migrated from other countries, places that were embroiled in war. Uncuffed producer Tan Tran has the story of one man who reflects on a life shaped by violence.
Shantan Bunn is still hardwired from the experiences in his past.
I was taught every time there's a loud bang, I run for shelter.
Shantan survived the Cambodian genocide that started in 1975 when the Khmer Rouge took over Cambodia. When Shantan was 5 years old, his family and thousands of other families had to flee their country to stay alive. When I talked to Shantan about his childhood, he would tell me the craziest things, but in the most matter-of-fact way.
I seen a lot of dead people. When we were crossing the border from Cambodia to Thailand, we had to go in the dark. We always moved in the dark. And I remember clips of moving in the dark, and they're always telling us to be quiet. But every time you go, my mom always don't look, but you'll see dead people.
The Khmer Rouge would hunt down and kill anybody they caught trying to escape Cambodia during this time. And Shantan remembers a moment when he and his family barely escaped with their lives.
During our journey coming up here, I remember the last night they were chasing us, and we ran into a Red Cross hospital. The odor of alcohol was so strong, and I seen people band-aid, and I just smelled alcohol real strong. We hid in the back, and I thought there were some people hiding with us, because I seen this face looking at me. And I kept on looking, and I was like, damn, he don't blink. And for some reason, I started realizing, oh, that's a dead guy.
I asked Shantan to share his story of immigrating to America with me. And for him, it was a definite culture shock.
When I came to Fort Worth, Texas, it was a new experience. It's the first time I rode in a car, first time I seen snow, first time I lived in a house that wasn't made out of straw, the first time I seen like canned beef, first time I ate beef. It was a lot of firsts.
Shantan had a lot of difficulties transitioning to American culture. And in order to survive, he used the belief systems he carried with him from Cambodia.
In Cambodia, we have a saying, as long as you're alive. Coming here, it was the same mentality, as long as you're alive. Because when I watched my uncle and them gangbang, every injury that we had, we never called the authorities because we were scared of them. Where we came from, the authorities robbed us. And we would not call the authorities, whatever it is.
Shantan grew up and started committing crimes, going in and out of juvenile hall. He was forced to meet with counselors about his bad behavior, but he says the counselors weren't very helpful.
I believe it's just they didn't understand where I came from or what I went through.
Shantan says he didn't trust the authorities to keep him safe. That's why he joined a gang. He saw it as a way to protect himself and his family. It wasn't until he got to prison that he realized why he did these things. Shantan's not alone either. There are other children of war in prison. People who have seen extreme violence and are shaped by it.
I've always seen myself as a survivor, and it was surviving through any means. It was robbing, either stealing, killing. It led to the way I live my life. It led to my crime. It led to the way my belief system, the way I thought, the way I interact with humans, period. I didn't understand that until I came to San Quentin and start taking groups and start realizing and looking over my life, because I don't talk about my life. Until I got here, they like, you have to talk about it.
Shantan's still healing from what he lived through in the Cambodian genocide, but at least now he's talking about it. From San Quentin Radio, this is Tan Tran.
That was Tan Tran, a producer at San Quentin Radio. In February, Shantan was granted parole. He's now awaiting release from San Quentin, but because of his immigration status, he'll be transferred into ICE custody. KALW's radio training program at San Quentin Prison is supported by the California Arts Council with funding from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, kalw.org/uncuffed. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Countless Bay Area authors with spring book release dates have had to cancel their launch parties and book tours because of the coronavirus. So we are bringing them to you in this series we're calling New Arrivals. Cara Black lives in San Francisco. Her book, 3 Hours in Paris, is set in that city in June 1940, 2 weeks into the German occupation. The book came out on April 7th. Here's Cara.
Stepney cleared his throat to get her attention. We have limited time, Mrs. Reese. Please, listen closely and try to remember everything I say. If nothing else, remember these letters, R-A-D-A. He gave her a half smile. No, it's not the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts, but that will help you remember. Burn the letters in your brain. Make them second nature. Rada. Read. Assess. Decide. Act. This stands for read the situation. Assess possible outcomes. Decide on options. Act on your decision. Can you repeat that? She did. You'll have practice examples later. Think those letters, Rada, to yourself constantly. Every moment of every hour. Wherever you are. Walking on the street, in the shop, boarding the metro. Any moment, a German soldier might stop and demand your papers. It's impossible to avoid them, so you need to be prepared. Always have a story ready. But be flexible according to the situation. Use your intuition, your instinct.
That was Cara Black reading from her new book, 3 Days in Paris. You can find more information on that and other books by local authors released this spring. Go to kalw.org/newarrivals. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sona Avakian, Christopher Agusa, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega Welch, Jessica Plachek, Andrew Seltzer, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.